Hey everyone, how you doing? This is Amon Green, Green Bay Packers all-time leading rusher, and you're listening to The Average Cheese, hosted by Dell and Todd, two lifelong Packer fans talking about their favorite team, the 13-time champion, Green Bay Packers. Go Pack, go!
What the hell's going on out here? Everybody's grabbing out there, nobody's touching!
It's going to get there. He turned 32 yesterday. Does he have a vintage moment in it? In the end zone, it is caught for the win.
So welcome to episode 132 of the Average Cheese Podcast. It's the whole family for episode 132. Thanks to Rhonda and the folks at R&M Management. Thanks to Dwight at ddgcustoms.com. And thanks to Dan and the folks at Bob Anderson Builders. Peter. It's episode 132. We've said this many times. It's another shit number for the Green Bay Packers.
Yeah. After the last few weeks where we've had, you know, Jimmy Taylor and Amon Green and what have you, it's not one of the great numbers, is it? Could have been the Chris Banjo episode or the Brandon Jackson episode, but I guess the one name who wore 32 that kind of jumps out at us for various reasons, but we remember him from that Super Bowl team of the mid-90s is Travis Jervey. Running back by trade, I guess, but made his name for the Packers on the field as a special teams guy, special teams gunner, and even earned a Pro Bowl spot in, I think, 1998 Pro Bowl after the 97 season. Didn't carry the ball very much. 109 carries for 431 yards over the 4 years that he played in Green Bay, but was certainly an interesting character. I think he was drafted by Ron Wolf in 95. For his speed and athletic ability. He ran a reported 4.3 40, and certainly he was one of the fastest players on that Packer team. He might be best remembered by many people in Green Bay for the ownership of a Lion. So him and LaShawn Johnson, who was a running back with the Packers in the mid to late 90s, had a house together, and they bought a Lion who lived with them for a little while. Yeah, a pet Lion. So, yeah, there's not a lot else to say about Travis Jervey. He continued his career after he played the 4 years in 4 years with the Packers, went on to play, I think, another 4 or 5 years in the NFL, played a bit with the 49ers and the Falcons. But I guess we well remember him just because he was part of that Super Bowl, the 96 Super Bowl team.
Am I the only one wondering, why the fuck would you own a Lion? No, what... Like when you said that, I was like, what?
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah.
Why the fuck would you do that?
Because you couldn't own a monkey.
How about how?
How do you get such a thing?
Not just why would you do something like that? Yeah. How? How does that happen in Wisconsin?
Right.
Can I get a Lion, please?
Yeah. I mean, reportedly they saw an advert for it, somebody selling it. And decided that's just what we need.
In Wisconsin.
Right.
Okay.
Come to our jungle in the snow. Pick up your lion and fucking go home.
If it had been declawed, apparently.
Well, there's a bonus.
Yeah. That makes me feel better about the whole thing.
Even though their mouth could just like crush your skull, but at least they're declawed.
Well, I think after it bit Travis Jervey in the arm, I think that was the point they decided to move on. We'll part ways at this point.
Good call.
I think.
The Citadel is near Charleston. In fact, when Marcy and I go down to our house in South Carolina, we go to the minor league baseball team, the River Dogs, and they play at the Citadel's baseball space stadium, which is basically downtown Charleston.
What's interesting is the Packers chose Travis Jervey when they could have had Terrell Davis with that
yeah.
pick. Nobody ever says that, but when you've got Dorsey Levens and you've got Edgar Bennett and those, you don't know how much opportunity another guy would have got anyway.
What if Terrell Davis would have sat on the bench?
Well, it's all about opportunity, though, isn't it? If you get to a team where you're sitting behind another guy, you might not get the opportunity.
Thanks, Peter. Let's move on. So the slices are just the other games in the NFC North. Did you watch the Thursday night game, Lions-Chiefs? Initial thoughts on the Lions at all, Peter?
I think actually it was quite surprising because it was almost a complete reversal of last year's Lions in that they struggled on offense. You know, they only put up 14 points on offense, but clearly played well enough on defense to hold Patrick Mahomes and that offense to 20 points. Now, I know Kelsey wasn't playing and all of that, but still, you're still holding Patrick Mahomes to 20 points. So it's kind of a little bit of a reversal from what they were going forwards. The question is, who are these Lions? You know, are they last year's offensive juggernaut or are they different from that? It's a heck of a good win. Heck of a good win. Probably the ideal time to play one of the top teams, though, week one, you know, before they get fully up and running.
Todd, thoughts?
They proved that they could hang, like, in the beginning, and then they also showed that they could handle adversity. There was a point in that game where you could kind of feel the momentum shift a little bit over to the Chiefs, and the Lions, they hung in there, they battled, and then they proved that they could finish. So Dan Campbell's got that team playing. So I found myself like cheering for the Lions. I have no fucking idea why, but I was.
The weirdest thing about that game, I thought, was miking up Aiden Hutchinson's parents.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, what is that all about? I mean, what exactly are they going to play? What exactly are they going to show? What exactly are they, you know, because there could be a lot of stuff that they're going to have to cut out there anyway. Right. It's like, what is the point of that?
Yeah. Imagine, like, Todd, your son is playing a, you know, even a flag football game when he was a kid and miking you up. You'd yeah. Have, you can't use any of that shit.
But speaking of parents in the crowd, did you see Jordan Love's mom tucked way the fuck up in Lambeau South?
Was it Watson's family that was like on the last row of Soldier Field a couple of years ago? I don't remember.
They kept going to Love's mom, and it's like you could barely see her. She was just like tucked in with the general pop.
Yep. And the dude in front of him, we follow on Twitter.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah, we follow each other, but I was like, huh, you're a celebrity, bro. Right there in front of Love's mom. Anyway, I thought that the Lions were going to, one, it's a confidence booster because they just beat the world champs, right? That's great. Did I think they played well? I don't think they played well. I think they kind of lucked into some stuff. You know, that interception was, it just fell right into Brian Branch's hands. And the Chiefs are terrible. Who are they going to throw the ball to besides Travis Kelce? MVS. MVS is their best receiver right now, and he's fucking terrible. They can't run the football. I don't know. Was it you, Todd? Someone was saying to me that I wonder if it's the Eric Bieniemy thing. Did that have a big impact on their offense? I don't know. But just winning the game for the Lions is huge. It doesn't matter how they won it. Winning those games, but I expected them to lose.
Too bad Travis Jerry didn't go to Detroit.
What?
He could have been a Lion.
Oh, and own
Lion. Boom, boom.
No, I
what? That would have been full circle for him.
That would have been. Well done.
He probably secretly wanted to go to Detroit.
Yeah, that's why he got the Lion. And in the opposite trajectory of the Lions is the Minnesota Vikings, who lost to Tampa Bay. Kirk Cousins had a great fantasy game, though. Throw for 300 yards or whatever, and they're not going to do anything at all. They lost to Tampa Bay, who I would bet you doesn't win six games this year. Todd, thoughts on any of that?
I didn't watch that game.
Me neither. Not a second.
I think I saw Mayfield throw a touchdown on like a replay or something like that. That was about all I saw. Good. Glad they lost.
Me too.
The big thing coming out of that game, or the big talking point coming out of that game after the game, was Justin Jefferson, who caught a million passes in the first half and they hardly threw his way at all in the second half. And there's a photo of him sitting on the sideline looking severely nonplussed. Let's say that.
Yeah, that's a problem. If your best player is not happy and you're losing games to teams like Tampa Bay, that's not good. Because those kind of divas like try to push their way out. Stephon Diggs comes to mind. So injuries in the Packer game. Have you heard anything about Jaden Reed, Peter? I have not seen one thing yet about him. I was super worried when he went down holding his knee. I thought this can't be happening right now.
The only thing, though, he recovered the onside kick right at the end of the game, Jaden Reed. So he was...
Oh, he did.
He was fit enough. And I know he's not running, recovering the onside kick, but he was well enough for them to put him out there on a play where you're liable to get hit.
Yeah.
that was encouraging, I think.
Even on the pass that he got hit, do you think Love had to throw that
ball?
Yeah, I was kind of like, probably don't need to. We don't need to do this right now, kind of thing. Because I was thinking, like, pick. What if it gets picked? Because it looked like that was probably like a third option or something. And it's like the game is kind of put away. We can just punt this right now, play the clock, and get out of here.
I kind of agree with that. I mean, the only thinking you got there is if I'm going to throw it away, I'll throw it away.
Yeah.
50 yards down the field, because even if it gets picked off, barring a return, it's as good as a punt. So yeah. I guess that's the. But I agree with you at that point in the game. Heck, I don't care if you go three and out. Just don't get anybody hurt on a play that you don't need to be running.
And I'm telling you, and I was talking to Todd before you came on, Peter, the whole hamstring thing is really starting to bother me. Dobbs, Watson, and now Jones, that's a franchise issue when that many guys have the same injury. There's something you're doing within your training room or not doing that they need to change.
And didn't Dontayvion Wicks have a hamstring injury last week or the week before? Because early last week, you know, when Watson was pretty much ruled out, Dontayvion Wicks was still suffering with it. I believe that was a hamstring as well.
And the last slice, I love 23 for many reasons. And he is always starting shit with somebody. Now, the hit on Justin Fields was 100% legal.
Oh, yeah.
No issue with that. He was at the yard inbounds, so that's not what I'm talking about. Now, Lucas Patrick, to his credit, came over. Now, that's not an illegal hit, but you don't want guys hitting your quarterback, so okay. And then they wouldn't let – so Slayton comes running over. That's the guy I want defending me, by the way. DJ Slayton is the guy I want in my back. He comes over, and then they wouldn't let neither guy back on the field, which I thought was kind of like the referees not need to get involved. Like, those guys are stuck on that sideline. Who was it that that 23 pushed? Was it Mooney or was it Moore? Like, nudged him on his way back to the huddle, and then Alexander Moore got launched on his head.
Yeah, I think it was Moore on it, because it was Moore that got the offsetting penalty.
And no one got hurt. I thought it was funny. Who got the Packers side of the penalty? I don't remember who it was. Was it Slayton?
Don't remember. Yeah, I don't remember.
It doesn't matter. All right, let's get on to the good, bad, and the ugly. It's the regular season. We're back to regular season stuff. The good, the bad, and the ugly on offense. Peter, you get to go first. What was good?
I'll let you guys talk about Jordan Love. I'll go straight on to Romeo Doubs. It's easy to forget that this is a guy in his second year who was a mid-round draft pick, stepped into that number one receiver spot. High expectation, or lots of fans have high expectations of him in his second year. And I think he's living up to them. He finds a way to get open, runs good routes, obviously makes the plays in the red zone, which you have to have, makes damn good catches, you know, the back shoulder catch and all of that. I mean, Romeo Doubs for me is the guy, aside from Jordan Love, that I think is really could be developing into a special receiver. Now, you don't want to jump ahead too quickly and all of that, but in the short period of time, he's been with the Packers, he's delivered every time that he's not been hurt.
It feels like we've got a guy that they want to go to, you know, that Love wants to go to. It's Romeo Doubs. It's not Christian Watson. I feel like that's the connection. They have a better connection than Watson and Love do, and it could be the difference in what the routes that they run, and Love feels more comfortable with the routes. I don't know, but when they need to throw it to somebody, it seems to go in Romeo Doubs' direction. I'll talk about Jordan Love. Now, Jordan Love, I mean, his passer rating was like 123. We'll take that all day long, right? It's efficient enough, didn't turn the ball over. Todd said it many times. I felt like he looked calm. Even on that fumbled snap that he got, he picked it up. He didn't panic. He threw the ball to a 30-yard wide-open Luke Musgrave, but he didn't panic is the whole point of that. Andy from NFL Outdated, he was blowing up Twitter this morning about how Jordan Love sucks. Now, Jordan Love had 12 incompletions. He wasn't 100% perfect, but he was very good.
And sorry, Dad, and he made the plays when he had to have them on third down and on fourth down. Whatever else you do on first and second down, and you do it the 20-yard line, the 30-yard line, the plays that win games are third and fourth down conversions. They are, and red zone offense, right? And all of that was good.
I mean, yes, he didn't get touched in the pocket. He got sacked one time. I think they had three quarterback hits. That is a credit to our offensive line for sure. But you still have to make the plays. Whether you're not being touched by the defense or not, you still have to make the plays. I saw this on, I forget, I wish I could, website I saw this on, of Favre, Mikowski, Rodgers, all the players that have had a first start against the Bears, their first start against the Bears, Jordan Love threw for more yards than Favre, all of them. Rodgers, Mikowski, Favre, Brett Hundley, I think, was in there. But he had the most yards of all of them. Do I think he's going to be a Hall of Famer? I don't know yet. Well, let's see how he does 17 weeks from now and see where he's at 17 weeks from now at the end of the season. But for today, against the division rival, he played.
Well, I think the other thing on offense, you kind of touched on it. There was a couple of other things on offense, but I think you touched on it there. The offensive line was good, particularly in pass protection. I think there's one or two areas in the running game that they need to work on. I'd need to go back and watch the film to specifically pick out players in the running game. But in pass protection, they all looked good. Bakhtiari was good. So, yeah, the offensive, lots of kudos to the offensive line.
The Packers were the highest graded team in the NFL pass blocking this week. I mean, that doesn't surprise you, right? I mean, it was that good. There was never a time where you're like, ooh-wee, Jordan Love is running for his life. In fact, on the one time he did get sacked, he took blame for that sack. Like that was a Jordan Love problem, not an offensive line problem. Aaron Jones wasn't used enough. We've been saying that for years. Apparently, that's not just an Aaron Rodgers issue. That's a Matt LaFleur issue. He did come out of the gate in the second half and say, we didn't use Aaron Jones enough. Okay, well, I don't fucking care that you realize it. You better do it. Start doing it. In fact, I texted Todd and I'm like, they use Aaron Jones, they score. They stop using Aaron Jones, and the offense just goes completely flat and they can't do anything. Like, that's a one-to-one correlation.
The weirdest thing, and I don't know this for certain. I'd need to go back and look at the play-by-play. But I've got a feeling that he didn't touch the ball in the second quarter. That's just as weird as – it doesn't correlate. It doesn't make sense.
It doesn't. Like, you forgot he existed? Like, there you go. And those drives were three and out, three and out. They had 2 3 and outs right in a row. You better figure something out. Maybe, I mean, he clearly did. And then he got hurt.
And I get that, you know, you're going to try and keep him fresh. It's a 17-game season. You know, he's not going to carry the ball 25 times the first game. I get all of that. But it's almost from one extreme to the other there. And you know, if you've got a guy with that talent, you have to use it. Because what are you saving him for?
Anders Carlson was good. That 52-yarder he kicked could have made it from 60. Straight as an arrow, too, right down the middle. Made all of his extra points, which I know sounds dumb, but he did. He didn't do that preseason. Game one, check. Just fine. Anything else that stuck out to you before we move on to the bad?
I think other than what you mentioned with the lack of use of Aaron Jones, I thought that A.J. Dillon obviously struggled. And again, I think you'd need to go back and look at the tape and see. I got the feeling, and I don't, this may not, again, may not be the case, got the feeling that they tried to run him wide a little bit rather than having him run north-south. That's clearly not his game, but I don't know whether that's a reality or whether I've just made that up.
No, some of it I would agree with. You can't pitch the ball to the outside to A.J. Dillon. The other thing is, I just don't believe we're going on the bad now. I just don't believe that A.J. Dillon can find his own hole. The hole needs to be where it's supposed to be. He knows that this is, we're running through the A-gap or whatever yeah. you call it. And if that hole isn't there, and if the backside hole isn't a huge cavern where he can see it, he isn't going to see it. 13 carries for 19 yards. I don't care how you are handing him the ball. That's terrible. Patrick Taylor, I think, in his like three carries, had more than the 19 yards that A.J. Dillon did. He is a great dude, right? Like you see him on social
media. Yeah, absolutely.
Nice man, all of those things. So, again, I'm not talking about the man. The player, though, I'm starting to worry, and we've talked about it. You said it directly that you don't think he'll be on this roster next year. I don't see why you would. He just hasn't done it. He's had opportunity. He had more opportunity than anybody else on Sunday. Nothing.
Not too much else. I wish that Luke Musgrave could stay on his feet. That would be...
He had some first game jitters, right? Like I felt there were things. I'm like, dude,
But at least he caught those balls rather than. In fact, the grass was tackling better than the Packers were for a while in that game. I don't think there's a lot bad to say about the offense, to be honest.
I just think Josh Myers is fucking terrible. Sorry. Now, the Packers scored 38 points in this game. Now, granted, one of them was a pick six by Quay Walker, Todd's favorite player. And it was early, but there were a couple plays where Josh Myers, I don't know if he can't move in space. And you said it too, and I'm sorry I keep repeating the things that you say, but they're genius. You cannot stick square pegs into round holes. If Josh Myers is a big man who is going to just stop the nose or whatever his role is, then stop asking for him to pull or do things he can't do. If you're going to do that, then you put the guy that plays right tackle for you at center, who's far more athletic, and let him pull. Josh Myers, on the play that, I don't know, was early in the game where Dylan got nailed for like a 4-yard loss, Josh Myers didn't touch anyone. And there was a play maybe 3 or 4 more plays later. He didn't touch anyone. He got out into space and had no idea, or he just couldn't get to anyone. I don't know what they do other than if Josh Myers is your center, then play the game like Josh Myers can play to the best of his ability. What else? Anything else bad before we move on? No, they scored 38 points, Dale. There's not a whole lot bad to talk about. Todd and I were talking during the game that I don't know why Bakhtiari was out there when the game was clear. Now, they did put in their second string guys. Rasheed Walker went out there. And there's no right time. You know, this is an NFL team that could all of a sudden, you know, they throw one in the flat to Darnell Mooney. He goes, or to DJ Moore, and he goes 80 yards for a touchdown, and the game's back on. So I get that. But it just felt like if you got a guy like Bakhtiari, it's sort of on a pitch count. Maybe you get, you know, move on from him and let Rasheed Walker come in. Defense. What did you like on defense?
The defensive line looks strong, and they got pass rush. They didn't always get to the quarterback, but I think they ended up with four sacks. But they got a lot of pressure. And I know we're probably going to get onto some of the tackling, which, you know, began to get annoying after a while. But I think that there's some caveats around that, which we'll come to. More than anything, the defensive line, it was good to see, you know, Devontae Wyatt make plays. Good sack, although he was unblocked and Fields pretty much ran into that sack. But hey, you still got to make that play. And, you know, Kyle Brooks got in there with a sack, which was good to see. I love that play that commentators pointed out, Greg Olsen pointed out on the commentary, where Kenny Clark made the pass rush, realized it was a screen that was coming up, started off after the ball carrier and kind of half made that tackle or got in on the assist on that tackle. That was pretty cool. I thought the defensive line was as impressive as we've seen from that defensive line unit for quite some time. Now, it's just one game and all of that, but it was good.
They are far more athletic than we've seen in a very long time. I mean, I was trying to think back, you know, during the game, because Brooks and Wooden, and we talked about this when they were drafted, they're different guys. They're not going to be that 325-pound stand-up-the-guard guy. So I'm glad that they're playing them differently, but they're just so much more athletic. And Wyatt, Todd, you've talked about Devontae Wyatt, and this is going to be his breakout year. Any thoughts on the defensive line before we move on to anything else good on the defense?
Career-wise, that was his breakout game. When you look at last year and his rookie season, and then I know we're only one game into this season, but if you look at his career, that's the breakout game right there. No question. He's the real deal.
Peter, I always ask you these questions and never prep you on shit like this. But so Devontae Wyatt coming out of college, I remember we talked about how athletic that whole defense was. From what you remember, and I'm not asking you to remember exactly what you said in the, you know, the draft guide from 2 years ago. He's athletic. What would you say his biggest strength is as a player? Like, what should the Packers be asking Devontae Wyatt to do?
So I think that what made him such a good player in college was he had that mixture of physicality, so he could overpower a guard, but he also has, it's difficult to, when you talk about a 330-pound guy, but he has that explosive first step for a guy that size. So he can shoot that gap between the guard and the center or the guard and the tackle. And that's why I expect, you know, as Todd just described, I expect him to make a lot of plays because he's that kind of guy. The impressive thing in college was that mixture. He had both of those things.
Yeah, Darnell Savage, 10 tackles. He made some plays. It's like, here we go again with Darnell Savage. Remember, what was it? Was it 1 or 2 years? It was 2 years ago. And he was off to a really quick start. We were talking about him then. That's the kind of game he had. We'll see. See how long it lasts. See if he can keep it going. Maybe he's found something. Who knows?
When Darnell Savage is running forward, when he has to turn and, you know, turn his hips and go the other way, that's not his strength. I don't want to say he's not good at it, but that's not his strength. Like him coming downhill and hitting receivers on those screens and stuff, that's what Darnell Savage can give you. Now, again, not every team is going to be throwing those balls out in the flat and those screens and stuff. So this kind of played into his strengths, but he played well today. He played well on Sunday. And maybe he strings a couple of games along, like you just said, Todd. Like maybe this is it. Maybe he's going to continue on this positive, you know, forward direction.
The move of Barry going up to the box, maybe that's already showing signs of, and I know it's only one game in, but you look at the preseason and then this game, and you look at the how the defense has performed, and you're thinking, maybe that wasn't such a bad move anyway, to put him up there in the box. So it could be influencing the whole scheme of things.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with everything you said. I mean, I think he's the kind of guy that you want playing 15 yards off the line of scrimmage, not 25 yards off the line of scrimmage. You know, you're right. Some of it will be about the opponent, but maybe they've found the niche for him. Let's wait and see. But like you say, it was certainly good on Sunday, and that's all we can ask for. Be good every Sunday.
Your buddy Quay Walker, Todd. Now let's start with Quay Walker returned an interception for a touchdown in this game and was the dagger.
Yeah. Like every other text I had to you was like, fucking Walker. Yes. Like over and over and over. And then all of a sudden he picks it off. I'm like, oh shit, what am I going to, I can't, now I can't talk shit about him. I'm like, fucking Walker.
I think even I tweeted, I know somebody that will have loved that play.
Right. Yeah. It's hard to talk shit or up until that point. Let's be honest. He struggled, it looked like, on several plays. Really far off the ball. He's making tackles or missing tackles downfield. And then he picks one off and runs it for six.
Back for a touchdown.
It's like, well.
His counterpart, though, Devondre Campbell didn't play spectacularly well. Like, he played a decent game, but it wasn't. He wasn't out there all.
Yeah, he didn't make any plays or anything like that, but he had a solid game.
Lucas Van Ness on the sack that he had on Justin Fields, I think Fields thought for sure he was outrunning Van Ness to the corner.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it wasn't close. Van Ness has that ability, that athletic ability. And, you know, while he's going to be a project or whatever, that was a great play. You have to have athleticism to take down Justin Fields, and that was pretty awesome to see him do that.
And very smart play, because it's easy to get too far upfield and overrun that play. And
right. He took a great angle to on that play, and it was the short side of the field, so he had the advantage there. I mean, did he play great in the rest of the game? Meh. I mean, he did some things, but he wasn't great, but that was a great play.
And the reverse of it too, right? So he didn't like angle back and try to give the quarterback, because any running back is just going to plant their outside foot and then you're done and they'll go inside. But he ran like very linear step for step with them, like straight to the sideline. That was impressive. I was like, whoa.
Rashawn Gary, for like the two or three plays that I watched him get in there, absolutely mangled the tackle. One of the sacks was, I think, brought back by a penalty. He also had back hit. Was it the rookie?
Darnell Wright, yeah.
He embarrassed Darnell Wright on two plays that I can think of. So next year they play the Atlanta Falcons. Bijan Robinson did some things in this game versus Carolina. They beat up on Carolina. So the question is, just like with the Packers. Are the Packers good or are the Bears still that bad? And then the same thing goes with Atlanta. Are they good? Or is Carolina that bad?
You know, if you look at the Atlanta game from Sunday, they played very solid, mistake-free football. So they were outgained yardage-wise, but they won that game off the back of 3 turnovers to none. You know, and Desmond Ridder, the quarterback, went 15 for 18 for 100 and something yards, so nothing particularly exciting there. But they played very, you know, pitch and catch with Bijan Robinson, caught 6 passes coming out of the backfield. So it was very conservative, if you like, football, but that's all they needed to win that game. Jesse Bates had two interceptions. Now, he's, to me, one of the premier safeties in this league, and that's a great pickup that they got for him. So he had two interceptions, 10 tackles, I think. There was nothing that you saw there other than, you know, we're huge Bijan Robinson fans, and the more as the season goes on and the more they get the ball in his hands, he is going to rack up yardage and beat teams almost by himself. But there was nothing from last Sunday that would scare you other than don't get out-turnovered. That's not very good English, but don't get out-turnovered because that's how they'll beat you.
Win the turnover game. But yeah, he threw for 115 yards. And I think he had like 46 going into like the fourth quarter or into the third quarter. They clearly don't throw the ball downfield right now to anybody. And like we were talking about before, if that's Darnell Savage's game, Darnell Savage should have a very good game in this game because there's no one that should beat you deep. Now, Scotty Miller's plays for Atlanta. The ghost of Scotty Miller. As long as Kevin King's not playing, we should be okay, but. I mean, Drake London should be a good player. But I don't know that Desmond Ridder is trying to throw the football downfield right now.
I think this game, the Atlanta Panther game, it might reveal how bad the Panthers really are. I mean, Atlanta doesn't really jump off the page. And statistically, I mean, what they did in this game was just very basic. And just they didn't turn the ball over. And to win 24-10, it's like, oof, the Panthers are probably not very good this year.
Two very young teams, right? Like, who's going to make the most mistakes is what ended up happening to lose this game for Carolina. On offense, Kyle Pitts is still around. Tyler Allgeier, before they drafted Bijan Robinson, was a very good player. I think he scored once at least. I know I saw one time he scored. Desmond Ridder is a young quarterback. There are some guys that they don't scare you, but there's some players on offense. I don't even know what they look like on defense, to be honest. Like, I don't – I know Calais Campbell plays for – and Jesse Bates, like you talked about. I don't know who this team is. I guess there are a bunch of guys that won a game, but are they – who stands out? Anybody besides Jesse Bates?
I think that Bijan Robinson is the star guy on offense. Only got 10 carries, I think, on Sunday. Caught 6 passes. He's a 20 carries a game type guy. Other than that, you know, you mentioned Tyler Allgeier. I think he led the Falcons in rushing this past weekend. Nice back. Other than Robinson, it's not a team, and Bates, it's not a team that you think is full of superstars. Not right now, anyway.
Tal, what's a key on Sunday? What's your number one key on offense? How do we beat Atlanta? What do the Packers need to do?
You know, try to piggyback off what Peter said. We didn't turn the ball over in the Bear game, so I think we need to do a lot more of that. I think Christian Watson will be back. And if he is, I think we have a couple shots downfield. But yeah, I think overall, this very, very winnable game for the Packers.
They're on the road, right? They're at Atlanta this week. I wanted to say that the Packers are 1 point
favorite. I thought it was 1.5. I saw it or something. Yeah.
Something like that. Peter, yeah. What do the Packers need to do on offense against Atlanta to win this football game?
I think they need to do more of the same. Don't turn it over. Convert on third down. Convert on fourth down if you're on those fourth down. And be efficient in the red zone. And those are the obvious things in the NFL. But for the Packers in particular, last year in particular, they were terrible in the red zone. And you're leaving points behind every time you don't score a touchdown. And this past week, they were excellent. And there was a mental thing where when they got inside the 10-yard line, you just knew that they were going to score. Whether it was going to be a throw to Dubs or whether the running game would get, it just felt like they were going to score. So I think they have to have that. They have to have sevens, not threes. Whilst Atlanta don't necessarily scare you, I think anytime you go on the road in the NFL is difficult. I think when you go and play inside a dome, in the other team's dome, that can get really difficult. It can get really loud. It can get difficult if you get behind. You know, you want to get on top early. You say that every week, but I think in particular in a dome.
For me, the one key is, do guys come back healthy? Is Watson around? Does Jones play? Does Reed play? You can't beat anybody with, sorry, Samori Toure. You can't, if Samori Toure is your one, or if Dobbs is your one, and there's, now you're dipping down to number four or number five as your two wide receiver. That's a problem. I think guys need to be healthy. They need to have this is not a season where you can get by with backups playing prominent positions on offense. So if they're healthy, I think that's the key. Aaron Jones, just having that diverse group, I think that's the key on offense. On defense, if this team is a run and short pass team, I think that plays into the Packers' strength. I think that because the Packers are so athletic on defense, you have to stretch the field. You can't have Savage, well, Rudy Ford, and your linebackers all moving forward be successful against the Packers. The Atlanta offense is the same as what it was last week. I think the Packers just being consistent on defense, what they did last week is the key. Todd, what else?
I hope that we see more of the defensive line performing like they were this past weekend. I think if that was the key, I think, to the entire game in Chicago, quite honestly. And I think if they can, it's not just the three, right? There's like six dudes in all different combinations that for their rotations, it's not just the starting three, right? It's like there's quite a few dudes in a lot of different looks with a lot of different, it starts there with the defense. If they can play like they did last week, that's going to catapult us to another one.
You start thinking about like defensive end and like the guys that backed up. If you look back, it was like Dean Lowry, Tyler Lancaster, like guys that weren't going to, I'm not trying to go down that road again, but
almost not.
Like you look at Colby Wooden and Carl Brooks, they're athletic dudes. They might not be great players. They can come in and disrupt plays. We didn't have any of that stuff last year. Our backups can at least disrupt.
Oh, yeah.
Whereas our backups before were just guys to take snaps.
Yeah, no, and I was just going to add to that. I mean, you look at the athleticism with their size of the likes of Van Ness and Rashan Gary. Those guys can line up at defensive end because they're big enough to line up at defensive end. And with the rotation they've got on the edge now with those six guys, the likes of Gary, who's coming back from the injury, doesn't have to play 60 snaps or 30 snaps. He can play 15 snaps or 20 snaps, hopefully. And those guys can all be rotated in and out. Providing the game plan is right and they don't start dropping the safeties deep into lots of cover two, because that's not their forte. I think the Packers will win on defense, because I think it's all about stopping them on first down, stopping them on second down, and getting them into third and long. But if you drop into that cover two and all of a sudden they're picking up 5 and 6 yards on first down, that will be a struggle then. If it came to it, you'd rather play that 8 men in the box, stop Bijan Robinson and Tyler Algier and say, beat me with the pass, because I don't think you can. That's it for me. I'm quite confident.
It's always scary to be very confident, right? Before we move on and give score predictions, I'm just looking at the snap counts. I wanted to look at the defensive snap counts in this game. Lucas Van Ness got 35 snaps in this game. I would say that's probably double what I thought he would get in game one. Now, granted, they were up, so he was able to play later on in the game. Carl Brooks got 29 snaps, which is one less than Devontae Wyatt. So they're cycling guys through. They're not just stuck with their starters and then everybody else plays five. Kingsley Enagbare got 41 snaps, but he was the edge rusher on Sunday. He got more snaps than like Justin Hollins got 25. Preston Smith got 35. So JJ Enagbare was the guy. All right. So let's get on to a prediction. Todd, we're going to start with you. Again, the Packers are right now like 1.5 points. It's basically a pick'em game.
They win this game 28-10.
Not close.
No. I think it might be, it might follow a very similar pattern as the Bear game. Maybe tight in the first half, and then I think they switch it on in second and shut it down. And as we're broadcasting this podcast, Rodgers just got hurt and is off the field.
Are you being funny?
No. The backup's in right now.
Are you being funny?
No.
Fuck.
I don't know how serious it was, but he's not in the game. He got sacked, and then, yeah, the backup's in.
All right, Peter. Peter just turned the game on too now. He's like,
my goodness. Yeah, I mean, this is going to sound crazy and obvious, right? I think this is one of those games that could be really close, or it's a game that might not be really right. It's a game that could be really close, or it's a game that I think the Packers could win going away, almost like they did Sunday, right? I don't think the Falcons can win this game going away. That's what I'm trying to say here. I think that, and I'm leaning towards, providing the Packers don't turn the ball over, I'm leaning towards the Packers winning in, I don't want to say a blowout, but I'm leaning towards them winning by about four touchdowns.
Four touchdowns? That's a blowout, Peter.
Okay, it's a blowout, but I don't think it's a, I don't think it's they jump out to a huge lead like Dallas did last night in the first quarter or anything like that. I think it's a almost a touchdown a quarter kind of game, and I think the Packers win this game 31-10, something like that.
You guys are very confident. I love this. This is the new era Packers.
But not forgetting that we all predicted the Bears would win last week. So
yes,
let's not talk about that.
And all the experts did too. Did you see the pregame on Fox?
Yep.
Nobody picked the Packers. Nobody.
Yeah, no one. Love it.
I'm going to say 28-13 Packers. They're going to keep Atlanta out of the end zone, which is going to make it, you know, a comfortable Packers win. No field goals from Anders Carlson. Just extra points. All right. So thanks for listening to episode 132 of the Average Cheese Podcast, the Travis Jervey episode.
Go, Petco.
Petco.